there's always a message involved.
Artists, including some local artists right here in the city.
And we're going to get it started on a musical tip. This woman was actually in Toronto this past weekend for the Toronto Palestinian Film Festival. She was the star of a movie called The Salt of the Sea, and she's also a very, very renowned spoken word poet. So here you have Suher Hamad.
America.
So from the Toronto Palestinian Film Festival, that was Suher Hamad, and now from one film festival to another, we are moving on to the Regent Park Film Festival. And I have on the line with me Karin Azé, who is the director of the Regent Park Film Festival. Welcome to Radio Basics. Karin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for being with us. Now let's see, the Regent Park Film Festival was created in 2003, and it's running this year from November 5th to 8th at Nelson Mandela Public School. Could you give our listeners a little bit of history about the festival?
Yeah, sure. It started out as a steering committee. It was a new immigrant who came from India who was studying at York University and decided to make her volunteer hours into this festival with her professors and the principal of Nelson Mandela. So it started out as a volunteer. It's still a lot of volunteers, actually. I'm pretty much the only staff, and we have a few contractors. But it started out as a small vision, and now it's a bigger vision, a bigger screen.
Right, great.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, the focus. You know, I know there's a focus on community films and then films from abroad that would relate to the community.
Right.
So can you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, we started out, in 2003, there were focuses on regions like South Asia and then Africa and East Asia. And since I've been around for now the second year, we've broadened it to what's going on actually in Regent Park.
Mm-hmm.
So the redevelopment, of course, is a timely issue, and then our sister organization is Focus, the Youth Media Arts Center.
Right.
So we always show their films at the opening night, and we've expanded that this year and last year actually to bring other groups, other youth media groups from other parts of Canada and Yukon and other native villages in British Columbia. And also, pretty exciting this year, we've got somebody coming from Slum TV from Nairobi, Kenya.
Oh, wow.
And a co-founder from the Burundi Film Center as well. So it's to open up a dialogue between, because what happened is that last year we had some, on our programming committee, we had some youth from Focus that had seen some films from native village in Brazil and got very excited that these kids were making films just like they were. Mm-hmm. And so then that's where the idea came, well, why don't we actually invite some of these kids to come and exchange their stories? So that program actually is called Community Stories, Youth Media from Around the World.
Right, and that one's going to be on the opening night, which is November 5th, right?
Yeah, November 5th, starting at 6 till 9, and then there's a reception
afterwards.
Yeah.
Are there any films in particular that you're extremely excited for?
That's always a hard question, I mean, I love all of them. I'm the programming director, although we have 15 programming members in the committee. So I've seen all of the over 350 films that were submitted, and we've got about 60 that we're showing this year. So, I mean, there's always some, it's hard to always answer that one, but I guess I really love The Amazing Truth About Queen Rakhela and Shot in Bombay.
Okay.
And Shot in Bombay is playing on the closing night, and I think that'll be a pretty fun film. They're both actually documentaries but feel like fictional films.
Well, I'm excited to see them too.
Yeah.
But on top of all the different movies that are being screened, the festival also offers many different programs and workshops.
There's a workshop happening this weekend, actually.
Okay.
It's November 1st and 2nd, and it's at Focus, which is the address is 500 Dundas Street East, in the rear basement. Oh, sorry, 600 Dundas Street East. And so that workshop is going to be teaching, it's for youth and for adults. It's going to be teaching techniques of the green screen or blue screen, depending on, it's where, do you know what that is?
Right, yeah, I know what that is.
Okay, so, and what we've collaborated and partnered up with the Cabbage Town Regent Park Museum that provided us with a bunch of archival photographs.
Mm-hmm.
that the kids and adults are going to be taught how to script write and then how to play inside of these images.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty neat. Actually, on our website, we have a little trailer that demonstrates a little bit of what it's going to look like on the homepage.
Okay, so definitely I urge people to go to the website, which we will give you at the end of the interview. And the festival is annual. It's an annual event, but you also hold year-round screenings, and there's a film club and stuff like that, too,
yeah.
Right? So at any time, anybody can contact you, and they can watch any of the movies. Is it, like, any of the movies that you've ever screened at any festival?
Yeah, it comes from our videotape library, which is pretty much all the films that we've submitted, that have been submitted to the festival.
Okay.
But then we have some favorites that make sense for the community, and through our program book, basically the members look at it and then choose the films that they want to see. So, it's a pretty collaborative thing in the film club. It's really organic that way.
Okay.
But and then sometimes I have films that were submitted to the festival but didn't show at the festival because we have limited time, their schedule, but they're excellent films. So those are some of the films that we've shown, and we generally have a filmmaker that's in attendance for a Q&A during our film club. And I should remind everyone that actually all of our programming that includes screening panels, workshops, film club, community screening, school programming, all of it is free.
Right, and you also provide free childcare for the parents who would like to attend events.
That's right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. No, it's important. It was a real important part of our vision because we are in Regent's Park, and although it is transforming, there's a lot of people that won't be, especially mothers, can't come to the screenings because they don't have babysitters.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for the listeners that would like to come out and support, I know, you know, most of our listeners are in North Toronto, but hopefully they can make the trek down to Regent Park. Let's just provide the information for them one more time.
So, the website is regentparkfilmfestival.com.
Mm-hmm.
The phone number to call is 416-981-6737. The workshop this weekend is free as well for Regent Park residents, and it's $50 for both days for non-residents, and can completely be we can find a middle ground. If people can't afford it, we can sponsor it as well.
Right.
And that's at the Focus Youth Media Arts Center, and that's at 600 Dundas Street East, and it's the rear basement.
Okay, and then Nelson Mandela Public School.
Yes, it's 440 Shooter Street, corner of Sumac.
Right, which is just east of Parliament for those who don't know.
That's right.
All right, well, thank you, Kanai, so much for being here on the show with us tonight. I really look forward to meeting you in person at the festival when I come with my kids.
Oh, great.
And, I'll be speaking to you very soon, so have a very good evening.
You too. Thank you so much for this interview.
Yeah, no problem. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
my thieves. From my thinking until M.I.M. Erica. Counterfeits don't stop the wettest of us. We Brooklyn, redefining black people equal to who? Yeah, what you supply. I know when I'm the one, I dropped it. It was in Venus, but a snake tried to spill a score on my pride. I'm in my cami, we bust a COINTELPRO, we creamy like fuck. We creamy spots, tell you see me lies. We let our creamy bullets fly. Should it reflect the sun? We say yes when we think of getting dipped. We say yes. Yes. Say yo, comrades, rest. Because we all bounce. We all bounce. I do bounce.
Yes, I do bounce. Yes,
she do bounce.
Yes,
we all bounce.
Come on.
I all bounce.
From back since the crook quarterback for giving birth to horn loopers. I took my first step with campus. Born troopers, got caps on gold cans for the whores I spread. Slapped hands with my mans by the walls we play. Now with Tim's and Cammy Floss, complete sack. La Fools, my squad rules from Solar to Luna. Jeep to deck, from Lobo to Puma, sold up like mesh. My cousin sent the kite. I read it in the corner circle CeeLo. Now all the niggas hate the CEOs. We move on the DeLo for our fam in jail. No stars, just bars. No cars unless the BMT on them. Crooktown bound street stealth to solve aroma. I drape soul hearts. I make soul darts. Cover mad areas in my crepe soul clocks. MC's lying is dying rap off. But here we are, y'all. With pleasure. Pleasure.
So it's one time for your mind. Twice. Times for Moomin and Say Cool. Thrice times for the Brooklyn Dimes. And it's seven times for pleasure. I stay on, she stay on, we stay on, yeah, we stay on. He stay on, we be on, cause we stay on with pleasure.
Here I go, the seven odd Manchu squad. Black notes I quote, I dedicate to my young star. Via subway cars, I span the metro. See no soul stilo, is living on the D-Lo. The galactic traveler, eternal explorer. Like the invincible master Asia, a true warrior. Neither here nor there, the master of illusion. My sun, moon, set, catch a wreck when we be cruising. The New York boroughs with classic boombastic. Studied all the styles, I got nasty at it. Like a Thelonious monk, I travel in peace, left on, right on, black man from the east.
We don't quit, we don't quit, nah, we don't quit, nah, we don't quit.
Yeah, like for nothing but beats and cheese. Sub-zero degrees, can't freeze the cool breeze. Ease, ease, a straight Brooklyn dude. Hit you off with some pellets, dip Brooklyn smooth. Ah, it's that certain style, uh-huh. Ask you a leg bar, squeeze off style quarters till herbs feel stressed. Playing slick games and avoid all rest.
I shows 5 seconds after that I flows. Left on cadre rebel grows, levels we grow. Jones in on the curb, I glow. Still posing in B-girl, freshest this. Left biscuits with MCs, one and all of them. Bust 90 my elbows and my whole crew for with pleasure.
Yes, twice times for Mumia. Now, well, that was Dickful Planets, in case you didn't know. But we're going to talk a little bit about the U.S. elections. We don't want to talk too much because we're really inundated with it, like on TV and magazines and newspapers, everywhere you go. It's all about the U.S. elections, and obviously the Canadian elections were completely overshadowed by the U.S. elections. But we're going to hear what Mumia Abu-Jamal has to say about Obama in particular. You know, because a lot of people think Obama is the savior and that he's going to come and change America, and it's just really not possible, you know. But for those of us who don't know, Mumia Abu-Jamal is an award-winning journalist, and he chronicles the human condition. He has been a resident of Pennsylvania's death row for 26 years, and I'll just add that he was charged for a crime he didn't commit. And writing from solitary confinement, his essays have reached an audience worldwide. So let's hear what he has to say.
Is Obama's victory ours? With the attainment of the required delegates to claim the Democratic Party's nomination for U.S. President, Senator Barack Obama has written a new page in American history. For by so doing, he succeeds where Channing Phillips, Shirley Chisholm, Jesse Jackson Sr., and Al Sharpton could not, by gaining the necessary delegates to demand nomination. Of course, there have been numerous black candidates for president, but these have been third-party efforts designed more to raise issues, to organize, or to protest than to actually win elections. Some of the best known have been Eldridge Cleaver, former Black Panther Minister of Information, Dick Gregory, Dr. Lenore Filani, and the former Congresswoman, Cynthia McKinney. But this is a different kettle of fish, for Obama's candidacy is the closest to make it to the winner's circle. What also distinguishes Obama from his less successful predecessors is he doesn't come from the civil rights, black liberation, socialist, or anti-war movements. Indeed, although his detractors may try to paint him as a leftist liberal, this is hardly true. On issues both domestic and foreign, he would have been more at home in the Republican Party of his black senatorial predecessor, Edward Brooke of Massachusetts. For though he is black by dint of his African father, he has studiously avoided black political groups in his long, harrowing climb to the rim of the White House. He has studiously avoided the very real and long-standing grievances of black America. In fact, he tried to run a post-racial campaign until Senator Hillary Clinton and her rambunctious husband, former President Bill, brought race front and center during the Super Tuesday primaries of February by trying to pigeonhole him as, quote, the black candidate, unquote. The primary wounded Obama, and as he won in the delegate count, he also lost a number of primary states, such as Ohio and Pennsylvania, that are necessary for a win in November. Politics is the art of making the people believe they're in power when, in fact, they have none. It is a measure of how dire is the hour that they've passed the keys to the kingdom to a black man. As in many American states, black mayors were let in when the treasuries were almost bare and tax bases were almost gone. With the nation's manufacturing base almost a thing of history, amidst the socioeconomic wreckage of globalization, with foreign affairs in shambles, the rulers reach for a pretty brown face to front the empire. Real change that you could believe in would be an end to empire and an end to wars for corporate greed, not just a change in the shade of the political managers. That change, I'm afraid, is still to come. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
If you would like to get more information about Mumia Abu-Jamal or hear more of his commentary, you can log on to www.prisonradio.org.
Dreams, come and be free, free, free. Raise your families. Promises, promises. Promises, promises. Drive your taxis. Work your jobs. No protection. Money is gas. Where I was born. Go back to where.
a heart of stone, alarming, you spoke in a charming tone. Porcelain promises broken fast like glass, unaware of the worth we have. Believed and breathed in the tales you told. Deep freeze, cold streets paved with gold, pay toll. For anew now to begin, left behind warm climates and closest kin. Now we're the workforce, your whores, we clean your floors. For the promise of a new world and open doors that close quickly, so sickly and unjust. The system kissed us with fisticuffs and said, welcome to the bottom of the pyramid, you hold us up. Is that not a reason to live? A glass ceiling breathing down upon our heads. If that's freedom, free us from the lies you said. You can't afford it, so you ignore it or do not know. You're all for it in the forest of the coldest snow. You can't see us, speak of this pot of gold and the rainbow bearing down upon our souls. Our goals not met, our homes unkept. A new life, we can't call it ours, not yet. The past and the present, not a sharp contrast. A thousand years, you still are the ruling class. Growing pains, you told us and broke our legs. Things would change, you asked us to sing your praise in a charming tone. Alarming, carving out a heart of stone, far away from home.
Listening to CHRY 105.5 Basics Radio. That were two songs from Lal's new album, Deportation, released summer 2008. 15 amazing tracks. The first one you heard is called Where We Belong, and the second one with guest to the album, spoken word artist Kamau, is called The Alarm Interlude. So Lal is an amazing band. Check them out if you haven't already. You can get their CDs at the Toronto Women's Bookstore, Spadina and Harvard. We're now going to have an interview with Hugh McKenzie from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Hugh's going to be talking to us today about the current economic crisis in capitalism that we're hearing so much about. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Corey. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great.
Good. Thanks for being with us tonight. So the first question is, we just wanted to get a bit of your perspective for our listeners on what's happened, and if you can speak to the crisis as being something either symptomatic as a broader crisis in capitalism, or what we've been hearing in the mainstream media about it being engineered by just a few people on Wall Street.
Well, I think that the suggestion that this is actions by a bunch of bad guys is frankly just stupid. It's really quite clear when you look at what's happened in financial markets in particular, which is what precipitated this crisis, this crisis has been a long time coming, and is really deeply embedded in a particular kind of laissez-faire, hands-off capitalism that's really dominated North America for the last 15 or 20 years in particular. You can point your finger at, everybody likes to talk about the guys in the red suspenders who are making the million-dollar bonuses, and it's true that they're there and the kind of unbridled self-interest or greed that drives that process is a contributor to this. But lying behind it is an attitude towards the relationship between government and the economy that has dominated thinking about public policy on the economy for the last 20 years. It basically says hands off, and the people who are making these decisions in the private economy know best, and government doesn't know what it's doing, and so we'll just sort of keep our hands off. And we're seeing the consequences of that kind of attitude now.
Mm-hmm. So a Coles Notes version for all of us non-economists, in like two sentences, what exactly has happened? What caused this huge crisis?
Well, at the bottom, it's people spending money that it's people operating in the economy on the basis of money that they've borrowed. It's people spending money that they don't have, and it goes right from the bottom of the food chain, where you have particularly in the United States. A consumer society where the real economy hasn't been generating the incomes for average people that matches what the economy is, what people are sort of selling people, right? What people are being sold as the kind of North American lifestyle for middle income people is not being matched by the incomes that the economy has been generating for middle income people over the past 20, 30 years, both in the United States and Canada. The real incomes of middle income families have basically remained the same. But the expectations about how much we can consume certainly have gone up. And both in Canada and the United States, more extremely in the United States, that gap was filled by borrowing. And the sort of poster child for all of this is the mortgage market, where people were being encouraged to basically buy homes with mortgages at 100% of their value, on the expectation that the prices of houses would just continue to go up. So people were getting into housing on the basis of borrowed money. And that kind of leverage, buying assets, buying goods, buying anything, anything and everything, with a little tiny bit of your own money and a whole lot of it paid for with borrowed money, that all works as long as the price of everything is going up. But when things start to, when there's any kind of disruption in that process, it kind of implodes in the other direction. Because what happens is that, and what happened in the financial markets, is that as asset values went down, all of a sudden you had players in the market who owned assets that were suddenly worth less than the amount that they'd borrowed to pay for them. And the people who lent them the money started saying, "Wait a minute, your asset's not worth what I lent you. I want my money back." And so what happened was that all sorts of people that had lent money out started asking for it back. And when that happens in an economy that's as driven by people exchanging debt as sort of modern laissez-faire capitalism is, it's a recipe for a disaster, and that's exactly what we've gotten. And it's not over, because people talk about the antiseptic word for this is deleveraging, right? You read about this in the paper, you hear about it in the media, that the economy is deleveraging. What that means is precisely what I've been saying, that people who have borrowed money to buy assets are now being forced to pay back the loans.
Okay, great. Thank you for explaining that, Tom.
And that sort of just kind of cascades downwards.
Okay, thank you for that. It's a bit hard for people to get our heads around, I think, with everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
Especially when you bring in the element of how this crisis might relate to broader geopolitical situations, including Canada's current war in Afghanistan and the other wars going on in Iraq, the impending potential conflicts with Iran and Pakistan. Can you speak a bit to how those broader situations relate to this kind of a crisis?
Well, they do in a couple of different ways. At both ends of the process, a lot of people would deny it, but I think that there's to a significant extent the wars in Afghanistan, but particularly in Iraq, have played a major role in fueling this boom. The right may not be very happy to be confronted with this, but the reality is that Keynes isn't dead, at least Keynes's ideas aren't dead. And when you have the largest economy in the world, and therefore the largest center of public spending in the world, suddenly going from a situation where they were running a budgetary surplus to running the largest deficit in that country's history because of all the spending, largely driven by spending on the war in Iraq. When you had that kind of economic stimulus happening, even if it's in a war, it really tends to it drives the economy. It drove the increases in these asset prices. It drove people's perceptions of their own wealth. It tended to drive significant imports, particularly from China.
Mm-hmm.
So the war played a role in overheating the economy in the first place, and I think this may be a bit of an odd thing to say, but I think this crisis is really going to cool down the ambitions of some of the crazier conservatives in the United States towards other adventures overseas, because the United States just can't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put $700 billion into a bailout for the financial sector, one day and the next day say, oh gee, well, I think we'll have another war. I mean, there are limits to even the United States' financial resources, and I think this economic crisis is really testing those limits.
I also think that
the other factor in this is that there are one of the more hopeful casualties, if I can put it this way, of the crisis, is that some of the very conservative economic ideas that got us into this mess have been totally discredited. Last week was an interesting week. At the beginning of the week, I noticed a story about a big argument going on within the University of Chicago about whether to name a building after Milton Friedman. And the opponents were saying, well, we can't name a building after Milton Friedman. His ideas are completely discredited. Well, 2 years ago, nobody would have said that. I mean, Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize for articulating the central ideas of right-wing laissez-faire capitalism in the Western world. And for people to be seriously saying, as I think they ought to be, that those ideas are discredited is really quite significant. And at the end of the week, I pick up my local newspaper and there's Alan Greenspan, the sort of high priest of laissez-faire capitalism in the United States through two American administrations, on testifying to Congress that he was clearly wrong in some of the assumptions that he made underlying the deregulated market that he advocated, and he didn't have a clue how it had happened or what went wrong. And that's a pretty amazing admission from a guy who was, as I said, really the high priest of laissez-faire economics in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, it's not really very reassuring to those of us here on the ground feeling the impact of this kind of a situation.
Well, it's not very encouraging right now, but I think over the next year or so, we're going to shed a lot of those right-wing nostrums that got us into this mess and that are making it difficult for us to get out. I think, for example, it's kind of encouraging that even the most extreme of the come hell or high water, no deficit ever people in Canadian political life are starting to acknowledge that maybe there is a role for the government to play in economic stabilization. So I think things are changing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's kind of cold comfort for people who are suffering the ripple effects of this financial meltdown. Because, I mean, one of the things that we've basically had three or four crises like this just in the last 20 years. But this is the only one that has really had a significant ripple effect on the real economy, and it is having a huge effect.
Okay, we're just running a little short of time.
Sure.
Here, and I want to get in some community-based questions. I'm just going to ask them. You can kind of give a short response.
Sure.
But what should we in our communities
be bracing for in the face of already job losses and layoffs? We know economic hard times often historically have seen an upturn in domestic violence, racism, hate crimes. What are the linkages between economic distress and these sorts of incidents, and what ways historically have communities come together to survive and support each other in these kinds of hard times in real ways? Like, some examples that I know from history include community food cooperatives, bulk buying programs for staple items like rice and so forth. If you could just comment briefly on the community impact and the community response side of things.
Well, historically, the last time there was an economic crisis of anything like this kind of magnitude, out of it, the modern trade union movement was born, which is sort of the paradigm of solidarity and people getting together to try to pool their resources to increase their economic influence. I think I'd like to think that as a society, we've gotten a little smarter about how to deal with these economic fluctuations than we were in the past. Even though it's sadly weakened, we have an unemployment insurance system. We have an admittedly inadequate social assistance system. Whereas, in the 30s, we didn't have either of those to any significant extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that some of the broader public supports are much stronger than they were.
Hugh, I'm so sorry, but we are out of time.
That's okay.
Thank you so much for everything you've brought to the show today. And,
not a problem.
We look forward to talking with you again in the future.
Great.
Have a great night.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
that was a track called Ancestors Watching by Climbing Poetry featuring Anjali on vocals. Great spoken word crew out of Brooklyn, New York. Just because what we were talking about before with Hugh, wanted to give the heads up that there are some instructions that we've put together at Basics Community Newsletter on how to start a bulk buying food co-op in your own community, and you can check that out at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com if you're interested. Micaiah, over to you.
Great. So now I have with me our final, certainly last but not least guest, a sister of mine, Crystal Harbins, and her brother is actually a committed member of Basics, and she is here to talk to us about an event taking place on November 16th at the El Macambo. How are you doing, Crystal?
I'm good, good. How are you feeling, Micaiah?
I'm feeling pretty good, you know. So let's see. What is Strictly Roots? It says Strictly Roots presents the event. So what is Strictly Roots?
Well, basically, Strictly Roots is a project aimed at creating a space for different grassroots community organizations to come together to create different links and alliances amongst themselves. If you see the current condition right now, we have a conservative government who's fully in place right now. They just won the last election. This actually makes it crucial for strategic alliances to be forged. It's also a space for different student groups and university students to also put a practical element to their studies. By this I mean, I remember being a student at the University of Toronto going through the Caribbean Studies program, where critical thinking was integral to the program and being ignited to do things, but having no avenue to channel that towards. But on this space, universities come together, and there'll be different organizations there as well that they can actually meet with.
Oh, really? Which organizations are going to be there?
Well, Basics will be there. Those of you who are down with Basics know the work that Basics is doing. They're basically, for those of you who don't know, I'll just give you a short little synopsis. Mm-hmm. They're basically an independent community newspaper, like operating out of the Lawrence Heights community. There's also Batsy, who has been fighting against police brutality since the 1970s, basically under deadly laws. There's the UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers, and also the Canadian Labor Congress, who continue to engage in the struggle for better working conditions for workers. There'll also be the Workers Action Center will be present, African Roots and Rhythms, and also the South Asian Student Alliance at UFT.
Okay, so not only can people come out and hear some dope music, which we're going to talk about in a minute, mm-hmm. but they're, you know, if they're just coming out for the music, hopefully they can actually get educated on what's going on at the grassroots level in Toronto, right? It's a great idea.
For sure.
But let me just ask you about the flyer here. We have, I know listeners can't see the flyer, but I have the flyer in front of me, and we've got the Wu-Tang symbol in one corner, and on the other corner I have the Lion of Judah, and I have the words here, Sound Clash to Remember. So do you want to explain a little bit about that?
Sure. The reason why we've chosen to utilize both hip-hop and roots reggae is because they're very interconnected. The reason that we use the Wu symbols because Wu kind of defines a generation of hip hop heads. Like Wu kind of put, I would argue that Wu put hip hop kind of on the map. You had cats
New York hip hop on the map.
Yeah,
sure.
You had cats in Japan bumping out to, you know what I mean, to tracks from Wu. And then the Lion of Judah, that kind of signifies, like roots reggae is kind of a symbol to engage people in that. But as I said before, they're very interconnected. I think one of the primary things that connects them is the fact that when they both started off at the grassroots level, they're very critical of the state. Not only that, they both give a voice to working class youth. And yeah, that's pretty much why we chose that. Mm-hmm. They're very interconnected. They're both not just musical genres. They also both serve as a political organizing mechanism as well.
Right.
So yeah,
right.
That's why.
Can you give me a couple examples of what's going to be played that night?
Okay, well, on the hip hop, you're looking at, of course, Wu. You'll probably hear some Lauryn Hill, some Queen Latifah, some Big Pun, some Biggie, some Mos Def, definitely. And then on the onto the reggae, you'll probably be hearing like Sizzla at his best. You'll probably hearing some Capleton at his best, Barrington Levy, some Queen Ifrah, some Marcia Griffiths, some Dennis Brown, Sister Nancy, and of course, last but not least, you'll probably hear some Bob. but not like the commercial Bob, you know what I mean? You'll be hearing some nice war, not no, like, yeah. We're not going to come with just some one love kind of thing.
No, no, more like what you can hear under our voices right now, like so much trouble in the world
type stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Amazing, amazing. And, you know, I'll just take a minute to big up Basics, and you know, some of the Basics crew are going to be the DJs for that night.
For sure.
Not naming any names, but you know, we're definitely have studied those two musical genres, and it will be a sound clash to remember, no doubt. So whether you're on the political tip or you just want to hear the music, definitely come check out that event. And just let's hear the details one more time for all the listeners out there.
Okay, so it's on Sunday, November the 16th. It's going to be taking place from doors open at 10 p.m. It's going to be 10 a.m.
Don't come at 10 a.m. They won't be open.
10 p.m. It's going to be at Elmo Combo. Those of you should know it, otherwise, I don't know the Elmo. It's at 464 Spadina Avenue, just at College, and it's going to be upstairs. Mm-hmm. We have two different rates. We have an employed rate at $15 and then an unemployed rate at $10. So if you want to come, you want to get involved, holla at me, Crystal, 416-455-7306. So you can holla at us at Strictly Roots meets Strictly Hip Hop event at hotmail.com.
Just the phone number and the email one more time for the people who just got their pens.
It's 416-455-7306, and the email is Strictly Roots meets Strictly Hip Hop event at hotmail.com.
All right, so everybody heard it out there. Killa Bees meet the Lion of Judah, Wu-Tang, Lion of Judah, you know, hip-hop, reggae, sound clash, grassroots organizers. It sounds like an amazing event. Don't miss it, and you got the contact there. So thank you so much for being here, Crystal.
No problem. Shout-outs to Basics for letting me come in and sit in on them for a minute.
Of course, of course. To all the listeners, that's basically our show for the evening. We got about one more minute left. We're going to leave you with a tune, but first, you know, just our peace outs. Good night, Toronto. Thank you for everybody who listened.
Yeah, good night, and we're going to leave you with some Zaki Ibrahim.
All right, peace, Toronto. Tune in two Wednesdays from now from 8 to 9 p.m. Peace.
Oh, my love, will I ever see? Will I ever see my love?
Will I ever see? Oh, will I ever see daylight?
Daylight. What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do? I could lose my mind if I don't see this through.